Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, a.k.a. Bob Ross.
Bob Ross, ladies and gentlemen.
Bob Ross in the house.
For those listening audio only, Garrett and I are in our Halloween costumes.
Yes, we are.
Garrett is a space shark today. He looks like a space shark.
My background is space. I didn't put water back there. I'm a shark in space. And I want to say that it's not easy. Like, you cannot use your fins to
do anything. No, it's hard to text with fins.
Yes. So I'm going to remove. Yeah. I'm going to use one hand here so I can be able to move around.
One fin, one hand. You're a hybrid.
One hand.
That's what happens in space.
Yes. I'm 95% shark and 5% human is what I am. Okay. Yeah. And did Bob Ross have his shirt open that much?
Bob Ross did. He had a very hairy chest and liked to show it off. Sometimes with jewelry. So today I'm sporting a little jewelry.
A pendant? What's on that pendant? Oh my God.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know.
I will say this though, Robbie.
Yes. Yes.
You had more chest hair on Voyager than you do now.
Yeah, I've got the Bob Ross beard going.
You do. You really do.
I'm feeling pretty good about the Bob Ross today. I've got a painting behind me.
He does. He's got a wonderful landscape painting.
Happy clouds. We've got some
happy trees and happy clouds.
Happy trees, happy clouds, happy sunset. Yes.
I love it. Oh my God.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I am broadcasting this week from beautiful Silverdale, Washington, where my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, Jesse and Jeff, just had a baby. And so we came down from Vancouver and we're visiting with family and celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yes, Jess, one of our editors, our original primary editor, is with a newborn child. So they're Robbie and Rebecca are visiting them and celebrating Thanksgiving. Yeah. And how long was that drive from Vancouver down to Silverdale?
Not bad. It's like 3 hours.
Oh, that's like quick. That. It's like LA to Vegas then pretty much, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
And you brought everything with you, right? You brought your green screen.
I brought everything except your ring light.
Oh.
Well, I don't usually use ring lights because of my glasses. They reflect oddly. So
you're using Jesse's ring light.
I'm using, yes.
Okay.
So we've got a little ring light action going on today, but I think it fits with Bob Ross.
I think it's fine. Did you bring the camper down? No.
Okay.
You just drove the Tesla then. Just the Delta Flyer, right?
I didn't drive the
Delta Flyer.
No, we've got two vehicles in our family.
Okay.
We have a Tesla Model 3, which I love, the electric car.
Right.
But that is taking a break while our hybrid Ford Explorer is the vehicle of choice.
We
drove down in that because we got to fit Walter and
that's right.
And lots of baby presents and things like that. So
and your podcasting equipment.
Exactly. Exactly. And my Bob Ross costume.
And your you know, you need room for the Bob Ross costume.
Exactly.
There you go. Exactly. Well, yeah. So for all of you that are listening, Robbie has this crazy wig on, which is kind of carrot toppy almost, it is the general shape of Bob Ross's hair. Yeah. That's for sure. He's got this shirt opened up. He just looks like
I got some
groovy
paint,
70s.
A little paint on me.
Oh, you did that. You did that to have a little atmosphere. You flecked a little paint on there. I like that. Looks
you know, artists are messy sometimes.
They are. And you look good. So happy Halloween to everybody. Let's just say happy that Halloween. Right now. Happy Halloween for sure.
Yeah.
Okie doke. So this week we are reviewing the episode concerning flight.
Yes.
Which happened right after Random Thoughts, which has Random and Flight in two episodes, which is
the Tom Paris fan club.
Exactly.
The Tom Paris International fan club.
Right. And now these Random are the two flight. Favorite yeah. episodes of the Tom Paris International Fan Club.
Yes.
Concerning flight. All right. Let's go watch this episode in our silly Halloween costumes and come back and review this. All right.
Can't wait. All right. See you
Thanks.
In a minute.
Thanks, everyone. Hey, everyone. Bob Ross and Space Shark are back. All right.
Yes, we are. I love this. We should dress up every podcast. We should put on a costume.
Every podcast?
Oh every time. That's hilarious.
That would be pretty funny. I almost look like a flower. The way this, like if I stand, if I'm high up, if you don't see the snout or the, you know, of this, of the shark, I look like a flower.
Yeah.
So now I got to kind of hunch over to look more like a shark.
you always look like a shark to me.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You really do.
You know, and I was going to say the same thing about you with Bob Ross, but you don't. You don't look like Bob Ross to me.
Although this kind of works. I mean,
that look,
it's my beard, my real life beard. So if I just had the weird 70s glasses on.
Yes.
That he wore. I think I could do it.
I have to say, I did look at your Instagram post and I really like the wig on Rebecca.
On Rebecca. Yeah.
It's just Orphan Annie. She's ready to do the whole Broadway. She's ready to go on Broadway, start singing. The sun will come out. I can just hear her singing right now. All right. So on a scale from 1 to 10.
Yes.
What are you going to give this episode?
I got to be honest. Because that's what we do. We're honest here.
We're not going to pull punches.
But we're honest.
Yes.
This was not my favorite episode. I went into this, even though I didn't remember much, I went into this with high expectations because of John Rhys-Davies.
Yes.
Because it was a Da Vinci episode.
Yeah.
I went into it with high expectations and I didn't like it very much. I got to be honest. I would give this like a 4 out of 10.
Yeah. I'm going to say the exact same thing. I mean, it's a great episode for John Rhys-Davies. He gets to do a lot in it, right? I mean, he gets to really have a bunch of screen time. So there is some positives there. Yeah. A nice scene between Tuvok and John Rhys-Davies as well in the marketplace. Very funny. Small talk scene was wonderful.
That was good.
So, and we'll get to that. But overall, I was very disappointed. I really was.
It just didn't hold my attention. It wasn't dynamic in terms of its plot points and like action or any of that stuff. Sometimes I feel like Star Trek often at its best.
Yeah.
It comes up with a real human experience and puts that experience into a sci-fi story that really pulls apart this idea of that human experience and explores it in a way that you can connect with as an audience. This one didn't. I even had trouble coming up with a theme at the end of it. I was like, what is
that? I hear you.
I struggled with this episode. But there's a lot of cool stuff about it. We'll as we talk through it.
Yeah.
Piece by piece, there's some cool things, but as a whole, didn't hold together for me.
We are almost, well, not almost, well, close. I mean, in the middle of season 4, we will be at the halfway point. Mm-hmm. Of all the Voyager episodes and of all the episodes we've watched and reviewed so far, this is the only episode I've actually fallen asleep while watching. And I'm shocked and ashamed to admit that, but I did fall asleep.
It happens. So, you know, a lot of people use Star Trek as a sleeping pill at night. They turn it on late at night and it puts them out. So It does have a reputation for that.
It does. But now I know if I have insomnia, I am turning on Concerning Flight to help me go to sleep. This is the one that's going to put me out entirely. Okay. So let's start off, as usual, with our poetry synopsis.
Yes.
I'm going to begin with my haiku.
Thank you. Here we go.
Concerning Flight. My haiku for Concerning Flight. I feel so weird saying this wearing a shark costume. Okay, here we go. Our tech is stolen. Janeway goes undercover. Da Vinci to France.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I like it. All right. Here's our limerick for the episode concerning flight. Janeway and Da Vinci can't fly. His brain really can't figure out why. Then Voyager's mugged, the hollow emitter unplugged, but it's science, not magic, that will rectify.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That limerick's better than this episode. Okay. Written by Joe Manosky. Story, co-credit between Jimmy Diggs and Joe Manosky. By the way, Jimmy Diggs called me the other day. I didn't pick up. I saw that he had called. So I need to call him back. And at some point, have an interview.
Let's get him on the show.
We need to talk to him.
Let's
for sure.
do it.
Directed by one of our more favored directors, Jesus Trevino, which is we enjoy Jesus's work.
Mm-hmm.
And we start the whole episode in Da Vinci's workshop. And Janeway and Da Vinci have basically entered into the workshop and they're soaking wet because they tried to test out the new flying machine. And evidently it failed and they plunged into a river. Is that what we're, is that?
Yes, it looks.
Some body
Janeway's
of water.
Hair was sort of, well, they said they jumped off the Florence Bridge.
Right.
So it must have been into a river.
Into a river.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, Janeway's soaking wet, but Da Vinci really isn't soaking wet. He's
She's drying herself off the entire scene.
Yes.
She keeps, even as she exits, she takes another couple of, you know, pats of her face.
Yeah. So, I'm wondering why they didn't wet down his hair. Maybe because it's a wig and they were afraid that it would.
I think he was wetted down a bit, but he was ignoring the fact that he was wet.
He was wet.
And it didn't read as much on him.
Yeah.
We definitely are used to seeing Janeway with her, you know, fancy hairdos, all the different hairdos we've seen. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of it looked like a kid's bowl cut to me. It was just sort of stringy and wet and I don't know. It looked like, some schoolboy's bowl cut.
Well, that is descriptive. A kid's bowl cut. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Failed flight. The Florence citizens are heckling. You hear them outside.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to go back and re-listen because I didn't know what was happening in the beginning. He's yelling. He was yelling and yelling at a crowd off screen.
Right.
Which I wish we could have seen some crowd or something because it was just confusing. And I didn't know what they were yelling about. I had to go back and listen.
Well, the loop group, if you listen, the loop group is looping in a few Italian words and then English. So it starts off Italian, you know, animal, right? So they say that and some other things, but then slowly more English is being used.
I didn't understand why it failed. I was confused in this first scene, I got to be honest. Yeah. And I was confused that she was in her Starfleet uniform because usually when you go into a holodeck program, you take on the clothing of the holodeck you're participating in. If we go into the Grendels, you know, the Viking holodeck, we were in Viking wear. If we go into Captain Proton, we're in Captain Proton. She goes, Janeway in the past has been into her romance novel in a, you know, 18th century dress or 19th century dress. This time she was in her Starfleet uniform. And I was like, why? It was confusing to me. Is she, you know, playing in this program, or
she's done that before though in this particular program where she hasn't been in you know, Italian Renaissance clothing.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
You know,
I guess this time it just jumped. It bumped me for some reason.
Okay, I justified it as she was about to report to the bridge, and she said, "You know what? I'm going to go in and get a quick little holodeck session in, and I'm not going to change into that, you know, different type of wardrobe. And because I have I have to be on the bridge really soon after this." So that's all I thought.
Yeah. It was a weird scene to me. This episode got off on a weird foot to me because, you know, like he's frustrated with Italy. He says, I'm going to go to France where I'm appreciated. And he reaches out at one point to tear up the plans of his flying machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Janeway kind of go, like she jumps and it like catches her breath. And I just thought, that's a really big reaction from Janeway, who knows that this is a program that she can just rewind and do play again. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no real stakes here. And I don't know.
And then
I found it confusing.
Did you notice when she reacted, then she does her best Coach Tarkanian impersonation? Do you remember Coach Jerry Tarkanian, who used to coach the Running Rebels? He would always have his towel on his face where he was like chewing on his towel practically. And so she does that weird thing where she brings the towel up to her face. And I just thought, oh, wow, why is she overreacting like that? That's
it seemed like huge reaction. It seemed like an overreaction to me from a captain who is playing a game at this point.
Yeah.
Like knowing that it's a game there. Nothing about the holodeck is unusual at this point. It's just, it's a game. Although I guess having said that, now I'll contradict myself. You know, Rebecca's got this, what's it called? The Oculus, the 3D Oculus thing. Mm. And I've done that a few times. And I know when I finish an Oculus, like Supernatural session or something where you're getting into it physically, it feels real.
It does.
You know, I'm tired because I've been jumping around and moving around, trying to hit, knock down the things.
Yeah.
So I do get why if she's in this holodeck, it's very realistic. And she would be playing along with the game as if it were real, I guess. But I don't know. Something about this one just felt like we don't have any stakes yet. I barely even know what they're talking about. Right. They're talking about a flying machine. He's going to France. Who cares? It's just part of the game.
Yeah.
And she gives him this pep talk. Don't give up. I just don't know why. I didn't know where what she's trying to play this game at this point. And why it seemed confusing to me, this opening scene. And then she gets a call from the bridge. Unknown ships approaching.
We're under attack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unknown attackers. Harry says at one point when she's on the bridge, he says a slight destabilization along the shield perimeter. And we cut out to space and we see, instead of the like photon torpedoes that they're shooting at us, all of a sudden we see this giant like scanner along the top of our ship after Harry says that. And we cut to engineering where we see B'Elanna standing by the warp core and a panel disappears right next to her, which we've never done anything like that. And I was surprised that you could make it a panel disappear, because I felt like our set was all built pretty solid. It would be hard to have a panel in and out. So that was just something I don't remember ever seeing, that, you know, part of our ship is literally getting.
Yeah. The panel that disappeared though, was that control panel that sits on the railing.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe.
Yeah, so it wasn't part of the wall. You can just pull that thing off probably. Right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, but different things are being stolen or being beamed. They're disappearing.
Cargo bay's got stuff, off,
right?
Yeah, yeah, medical instruments disappear. Yeah. We go to sick bay. We see the doctor there and the big bio bed, the surgical bed in sick bay disappears. Mm-hmm. I love. We go back to the bridge, and Janeway is caught up when all this stuff is disappearing. So she says, "Tuvok, fire at will," and he says, "I have the will, Captain, but not the means." Very clever.
I almost felt like they should have went the comical route. They should have beamed both Chakotay and Janeway's chairs off the bridge, and they just fall. You know, and they go.
Well, that would have been funny.
That would have been funny. Good. I would have liked that.
There was some funny stuff in this episode.
There was definitely a few funny moments for sure. Yep.
Harry says the main computer processor is gone, Captain.
We've lost
weapons. We've lost navigation. Yeah. We've lost propulsion. They're all down.
Yeah.
And Paris has a line, "I feel like we were just mugged," which I love. It's like he just cuts right to the no tech, no babble for him. It's we were just mugged. I liked it.
How 20th century of you to say that?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not a term that we hear very often in the Star Trek world, right?
No.
Mugged, which is kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
We jump to the briefing room, and now we're just talking about how will we get our stuff back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been mugged. These aliens are basically thieves, and they've stolen everything. Well, not everything, but a lot of things. And of course, the doctor chimes in. Well, the most important thing that's missing is my mobile emitter. And clearly something's going to happen with that mobile emitter.
Did you notice in the wide shot that we were all sort of crammed over towards the window side of the table?
No, I didn't notice.
There was a number of places in this episode. One of my favorites, actually, we'll get to later, where the staging I thought was forced so much. Mm-hmm. Like this was one, and we've talked about that before, where, you know, because of the lens and they want to get everybody
because of the
in
camera.
The shot,
yeah.
We sit in, you know, we sit or stand in places that we wouldn't
correct
normally in the real world ever sit or stand like that.
Yeah.
But that was one in the briefing room. We were all sort of, you know, close together and at one end of the table where there was probably a whole end of the table that was not being used. I don't know why we would ever sit like that, but we did for the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And we do hear that a month's supply of emergency rations are gone. And Tom Paris again has a little quip. He says, well, no loss there. And Kate's look when I said that, I loved her look. She was like, you know, all business. And then all of a sudden she looked over and she's like, what? Gave me a look. I thought it was very funny.
Nice.
I did also like in that scene when Janeway says to Harry, track those ships, basically, you know, do whatever it takes to track those ships that stole our stuff. And Harry says, yes, ma'am.
I know.
You said a yes, ma'am in there.
I did. Mm-hmm. If I had a time machine, yes. I would go back in time to when we were filming that scene and I would say it the way Tom says it. I'd say,
I know.
Yes, ma'am. I would do a little lilt at the end.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. We do, by the way, have Yes, Ma'am t-shirts. Just a little plug for the store.
Yes, we do.
We have Yes, Ma'am t-shirts.
We got them.
That just came in. So,
we got them hot off the presses.
A lot of people were asking about that for Tom's signature catchphrase.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
It's there.
So and now good. Harry says it in the briefing room.
He does. He does.
Astrometrics after this. I love as soon as Harry walks in, Seven's like, Ensign, there will be no fraternizing.
I don't have time. Oh my gosh. This is such a weird scene for me. I mean, the blocking was weird. Everything was weird for me.
Well, let
me hear you talk about it first and I'll chime in.
All right. So Harry comes in and she immediately says no fraternizing, which I thought was, it made me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. He hopes to enlist her help. He wants to extend the sensors to track the ships like the captain told him. And she says, I'm already working on that. I've been working on that for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So she's like snapping at you. She's pretty. And then you walk over to see what she's doing.
Yeah.
And Harry ends up standing 2 inches from her face. Now we have had some close standing on our show, some awkward close standing. But I wrote down, this sets a new record for close standing on Voyager. I've never seen such close standing.
It was so close. And I didn't find the light. I stayed in her shadow.
Oh, yeah, you got a little block there.
Yeah, I got blocked. And that's one of the things that, as an actor, that you need to do is you need to find the light, right? You need to make sure you're lit. And I was in the shadow the entire time. And it was so close, awkwardly close.
It was awkwardly close. And you hung out there a little while.
Yeah.
It was like,
And then, you know, so we go to work and she comes over and kind of bumps me out of the way. And I do remember filming this scene, actually. I do. Yeah, nice. I remember that we actually had a good laugh. There was one time when she came over and she ended up stepping on my foot or something like that. I was you know, so we had some bloopers in filming the scene because it was in such close proximity to each other.
It was.
Yeah. So we had some issues there. And then, for me, it was just awkward. I just felt really awkward watching that scene, you know? So,
well, it was a weird scene because it didn't relate directly to the plot of this episode in any way.
Right.
I mean, you were going in there to work on the sensors, the long range sensors, which did relate, I guess, but you didn't really stay on point with that. You just, it started becoming about something else, about how Seven is getting, you know, is being rude to people and you try to give her some advice and she's cold about that. And I don't know. It sort of became this like B or C story.
Yeah.
Feeling that never really paid off. Like Seven has another conversation in sick bay about getting in a bickering kind of fight with B'Elanna.
Right. Later on.
Seems kind of tracking this story that you're doing the scene about.
Yeah.
But I think that's about it. Like, I don't think we ever revisit that issue. So it just felt like sort of tagged on there, this whole storyline and the scene and the scene with the doctor. It just felt sort of tagged on and didn't seem to relate to the plot.
I agree. So now let's move to the bridge. Mm-hmm. On the bridge, we finally tracked these stolen items mm-hmm. to a planet and actually a city. And the main item that we need is the mm-hmm. main computer processor. That's the most mm-hmm. important, not the mobile emitter. Mm-hmm. The most important is the main computer processor.
Yep.
And so Janeway decides to go down on an away mission undercover with Tuvok. Mm-hmm. And she shows up in the city square. And lo and behold,
before she gets yep. there, by the way, so on the bridge, yes. she says, Tuvok, you're with me. We're going to go to the northern continent. Tom and Neelix, you're going to head to the southern continent.
Right.
And see what you can find there. And then we go to this establishing shot of the city for the first time.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I was looking at it going, that's like Malibu Canyon or yeah, something.
I said that's it.
It looks like Topanga or Malibu or something.
I made the same note. This
city sort of sitting
on top of the mountain.
Sitting
the
on
hills.
Top. And I'm like, yeah. It makes no sense to build a city there because it's hard to get all the way up there to the town.
Yes.
Like you should build it. And then I could see just beyond where they put the city in the Malibu Hills, the visual effects city, you could see the San Fernando Valley. You could see like Mount Washington. You could yeah. see things.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why wouldn't they just put a city over in that big valley that I know is there?
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd never build a city on this hilltop. But anyway, yeah. it was a weird place to put a city.
I made the same notes. I said, that looks like the Los Angeles area. And mm-hmm. I said, not only does it look like that, they've also included the LA smog somehow. Mm-hmm. I think the smog of LA is also part of that establishing shot, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like the city, the feeling of the city didn't yeah. fit with the background exactly.
That's right.
It's something about it just, and it was a weird place to put a city on the top of this hill.
That's right. All right. So now we're in the city square and yes. Janeway is there with Tuvok undercover and they're looking around and all of a sudden we hear a very familiar voice and it's Da Vinci. And we're wondering what, how, and then
not only do we hear a familiar voice mm. that we've seen before, but we're standing again in a town square. In the same set
yeah.
we've seen before.
Another town square set.
Boy, yeah. we have used yeah. this set a lot.
That's true.
It's like we literally just threw some paint, put yeah. some rivets on it, like some yeah. rivets to look like, I guess, a different finish or something.
Yeah.
But it was the same set. And we've talked about this before this at this point in our series. Mm-hmm. We keep sort of recycling the same set and it mm-hmm. feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it. You know, we recycled the same cave sets. A lot.
We did.
But the thing about caves is they're so sort of, because it's a natural environment, not a man-made environment,
mm-hmm.
You sort of buy the familiarity of rocks or, you know, if we painted them with snow or ice or white right. or black right. or brown.
Right.
But when you build a man-made environment, like a town square,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, the architecture of that space, you start to see over and over in multiple episodes. Mm-hmm. It you can see that we're reusing
yep.
it.
And agreed.
Anyway,
agreed. Yep,
another visit to the same town square set.
And I love when Da Vinci shows up. We do see now the mobile emitter
mm-hmm.
now on Da Vinci, and I just
right
love
in the middle of his chest, right about yes. where my Bob Ross
your pendant
gold
is.
Pendant
there you go.
Is. Yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
I think Da Vinci should have had a Bob Ross gold pendant as well. And I love his line, "Welcome to America." Like he thinks this is the new world, which is lovely. So see, that to me was funny. I laughed at that. I thought that was great.
Da Vinci has the mobile emitter. "Welcome to America," he says. It was funny.
Yes.
He talks about Tuvok's ears. It's like, where are you from? Interesting. And
Tuvok just anyway. Lets him touch his face. It's just Tuvok just sits there like Tuvok's like a puppy dog. He's like, okay, I'm going to touch this face and move it around. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a little odd too. I was like, what's happening here? But then again, Tuvok doesn't have a lot of emotion, right? So he's not going to be that upset about it, I suppose.
I also thought that Tuvok's outfit looked really good. Like that was a good look for him. It was sort of a quilted, you know, shoulders and breastplate area. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was a good, like tailored look for Tim Russ. He looked really good.
Yeah. I think that was a nice Vulcan wardrobe mm-hmm. choice for him. We have a little time passage, a passage mm-hmm. in time. They're still in the city square and Da Vinci finally convinces them that he's got to bring them to his new workshop. The workshop mm-hmm. that exists because of his patron, the prince. the character known as Tao. Mm-hmm. And Tao was played by guest star. Tao, played by John Vargas, our lead guest star,
yep.
who was also in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the feature film.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's his Star Trek pedigree. He's wow. already done Trek. And that Trek was done way before Voyager. So Vargas, is his resume is long, 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 long resume. Wow. He's done quite a few things.
Wow.
And then the other guest star was Don Pugsley. Don mm-hmm. Pugsley played the alien traitor that was in the briefing room with Chakotay. He had, you know, somehow come across our phaser rifle and a tricorder. Yep. And
a uniform, by the
and
way.
A uniform, he was right. wearing he's a wearing a, he's wearing a command uniform. And Pugsley also, you know, extensive resume, no other Star Trek credits, but he did work on Dark Skies, which is the sci-fi series that Jeri Ryan was on before she came on to Voyager. So
interesting.
There's that connection.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Da Vinci brings them back to his new lab,
yeah,
which has the classic glass ball with the lightning electricity going on, you know, the classic sci-fi prop.
Yeah.
Which
is what they use in the Borg regeneration.
It's the Borg regeneration. Yeah. It's in Captain Proton's lab, ship. Yeah. It's all over the place. I was thinking, if Da Vinci came into this lab and was like, oh my gosh, I've got such a great new lab now. He doesn't even know what electricity is. Like, he doesn't even like,
you know, he's a quick learner.
Like,
he's a
mind
quick study.
Blown. If he got into this lab with some of the things, like, how would he be able to know what electricity is. Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, computer engineering and electrical engineering and circuits and wiring. Yeah. And how did he do this in like 4 hours?
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is that Da Vinci should have been in a state of shock the entire episode because he's been exposed to all these new advanced technologies, which he doesn't know anything about. Right. But we're just going to assume that he's a genius.
Yes.
He does shoot a phaser, but he calls it electricity. He doesn't say
lightning.
It's a phaser.
Because they say it's
he says lightning. It shoots lightning. It concentrates lightning. So it's definitely above his pay grade. entire lab. But it's a cool looking lab, though. I mean,
it's
a very cool
lab.
That's a nice
workshop.
It is
a very
workshop.
Cool lab. Yeah. I'm getting my Bob Ross hair in my eyes. I just have to clear out my Bob Ross hair. It's not easy being Bob Ross.
I've been adjusting my shark costume as well. This into my teeth, exactly, which look like flower petal thingies. But what are you doing?
I'm trying to make sure my pendant is really my neck.
Well, you know, whatever you do, don't block your chest here. I don't want you to block any of that.
Yeah,
chest
there
here.
We
which
go.
There you go, or the pendant. Mm. Does that? Do you? Where did you guys find that pendant?
This was Jesse's. This is Rebecca's. we're at Rebecca's sister's.
Yeah.
I didn't have the pendant. And so I asked Jesse and she went in like her jewelry. So I, that's why I don't even know what it
is. It's a Jesse pendant.
It is. It's a Jesse pendant.
Maybe it's an award. Is it a medal?
No,
it's like, almost looks like a medal.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's perfect.
It is.
I wanted some 70s glasses, but I didn't have those.
I think you should go back to work on Resident Alien in this getup like this.
I might. I mean, you know? I could reuse this.
I don't really think you should. Do you have any more comments about the workshop?
Well, the briefing room, not in the workshop, but
okay, we're moving on.
Yeah, moving on. When we go to the briefing room, we have a very rare example of a bald alien, with male pattern baldness, because he did have hair going around, you know, like a classic human male pattern baldness look.
Like the doctor. He looked like the doctor. He was an alien doctor,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I just love when we have male pattern baldness on aliens.
On aliens?
Great. Yeah, it's awesome. He does explain who stole it. He talks about this man, Tao.
Yeah.
Which is the prince, the benefactor of Da Vinci now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he says that Tao controls the seventh province in the northern continent. And Chakotay says, you can keep whatever you've got. We just have to find this computer. We're looking for this, you know, this one thing. And he stops him on the way out and says that uniform looks really good. And the color looks really good, or something like that. Which I didn't even catch that it was a Starfleet uniform until he said that. And I was like,
are you kidding? Oh, you didn't notice that? Oh my goodness.
Well, because he had on like another kind of weapons belt that he had stolen, over him. So
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, during this episode, do we even get a name of a species?
No.
Do we even hear what these people are? Anybody? No, I don't think so either.
When we cut away from the briefing room, we go back down to the planet and finally see Tao, this weapons dealer.
Well, before and we see Tao, we're in the city square and Janeway and Tuvok are talking, right? Janeway tells Tuvok, I need to find Tao. And that's when Da Vinci shows up and Janeway says, stall him, make small talk, talk to him, do anything. And that's when we have that lovely comedic scene of Tuvok of Scandinavia.
Yes.
Make small talk.
Which Da Vinci says, where are you from? And Tuvok responds, Scandinavia. Yes. A very funny scene. All the small talk was good. I did not like when Da Vinci says something about Vulcan. And Tuvok goes, wait, what? And Da Vinci says, yes, it's a small island off the coast of Italy.
Oh.
Which may be true, but it just seemed like that was way too convenient. That Da Vinci happens to talk about this island that's the same name as what Tuvok is.
Yeah.
It felt like a little much. The rest of the scene I love, but when it got to the Vulcan, you know, the island of Vulcan, I was like, I don't know if we should have gone that far.
He should have said Vulcan, a small farming town in future nation Canada is what he should have said.
Exactly.
No, exactly. He did the Italian one. Okay. All right. So that pulled you out. I don't even remember him saying
it. Did.
I think that's when I fell asleep during that conversation.
It might have been.
Okay.
So they have their small talk. And then Janeway is talking with Tao, this weapons dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells Tao that that she has a friend or a client or something that runs a colony about 20 parsecs away, she says. And they need a computer. And so she's fishing. Basically, Janeway's fishing for information with this guy, Tao.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I may have something. And he brings her over and shows her this computer interface. And we hear the voice, Majel Barrett's voice, for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Voyager's computer. We know it's a Starfleet computer voice. And by the way, Janeway says something when the computer starts talking in Majel Barrett's voice. Janeway goes, verbal interface. Impressive.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, Google, Siri, Alexa. Like, it's amazing what, you know, seemed impossible in the 90s, you know. A verbal interface with our computers,
right?
That seems like sci-fi stuff. Now everybody's got it in
everyone's got it,
some version.
Agreed. Now see, this is where I get a little foggy, because I'm thinking, well, there it is, the computer's right there, just beam that up. But evidently the computer was elsewhere in a storage facility.
It was in a storage facility. And so he was saying there was a verbal, maybe that's why she was going impressive, that he was interfacing remotely and the computer was somewhere else.
Maybe that's what it was.
That's why she was saying impressive, because she thought she had it. Okay. So that maybe helped clarify something for me, because I was with you. I started getting confused.
Yeah.
Why they can't beam it out, why they have to go somewhere else, why there's so much trouble to beam. I guess because of the shielding, they couldn't beam out Janeway and Da Vinci until they, you know, end up taking a hike and doing all kinds of things.
Right.
It just sort of lost me in the logic of what was going on here.
Agreed.
I almost wish, like I said, it was lacking some action, and I wish there had been more either chasing or hiding or gunfights or something with some action jeopardy. That would have made more sense to me than explaining it with, you know, their shields or something. I don't
know.
Tuvok suggests at this point, he says, you know, we need to go back take Da Vinci back and let's analyze his, you know, his journals and his mobile emitter and all this, and figure out what Da Vinci might know about this planet and where things are. And Janeway says, no, I want to keep Da Vinci here. I want to use his mind. You know, she's talking about what a genius he is.
Yeah.
And Tuvok's like, well, I think we should just bring him back. She goes, no, you go back and analyze all this stuff. I'm going to stay here and work with Da Vinci.
Yes. And a quick side note, this is now back in Da Vinci's new workshop. We're no longer the town square any longer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're back in the workshop. And so Tuvok beams out.
Yep.
And I also thought it was funny when, Da Vinci is talking, and in the middle of talking, Tuvok reaches over and pushes his mobile emitter like a pause button on a remote control, and Da Vinci just sort of freezes, and Tuvok then talks to Janeway about, you know, well, let's go back, and he's frozen the whole time. That was just a simple split screen. You could see that, you know, Janeway and Tuvok were on one side of the screen. They froze the other half of the screen, freeze frame the other half, so he looked frozen. Then they went into some coverage, some, you know, close-ups of Janeway and Tuvok. And then when they came back out, you saw Tuvok transport back to the ship. Mm-hmm. But I did see John Rhys Davies in that moment sort of
Okay. But in the first split screen image shot where he is totally frozen, and it's not John Rhys Davies frozen, but his image is frozen, in the background against the wall, there was a bit of a kind of an artifact there. It was just, I don't know if you saw that.
Light moving or something?
Yes, it was light moving. So what was that?
I wonder if it was a boom shadow. This is a classic problem in filmmaking, and maybe you guys have seen it, but you know, there's a sound man holds a long pole with a microphone on it and moves it around where the actors go. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it'll go into the light, kind of like my hand is doing. And you'll see a bit of a shadow or something.
Wow.
And you won't really know what it is. I bet you that's what was
going
on.
That's probably what it was then. Wow.
I bet it was.
Well, thank you for clearing that up for me.
Maybe. Okay. I'm guessing. I didn't see it, but I bet that sounds like something like a boom shadow.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we go back to sick bay and the doctor's examining Seven, giving her a checkup, and he's sort of reprimanding her. She should have been in here earlier, you know. And my first thought was, he's talking about all of her optical sensors and things. And I thought, why is a medical doctor examining optical sensors? This should be,
this should be B'Elanna doing this.
It should be B'Elanna. Yeah.
No, but
or they should be doing it together.
Yeah. It just, you know, you're right.
Yeah. It was very confusing to me. And normally I didn't get confused with the doctor working on Seven or, you know, giving her medical treatments, but It for the first time, it occurred to me, like, we should probably always, when Seven's in for those treatments, we should have the doctor and B'Elanna.
Mm-hmm.
And they should both have to deal with their separate technology and physiology combined. So, and I think that would have been an interesting trio to see kind of sorting things out with Seven's technology. It would have been fun to see that.
Yeah.
But he wants to gossip. He wants an update. He's like, well, so what's going on? And she keeps saying, I don't want a small talk with you. And he's like, well, I'm stuck in here. I don't have a mobile emitter. I don't know what's going on out there. Please tell me. She tells him something like, well, there was a little something in the mess hall. Balan and I got into an argument and she referred to me as an automaton, Seven says. She called me an automaton, which I thought was kind of silly. And then said some expletives in Klingon or something.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting description.
I don't know about this scene. I don't know about, would the doctor's program have this kind of FOMO, this fear of missing out, of not being able to get out of the sick bay? Would he even experience that? You know, then why is he into gossip? To me, it just came off as creepy. I just thought the doctor looks really creepy in this scene. So these are questions that I never really thought about beforehand,
yeah,
you know, back in the day. But now that I'm watching, I'm like, why would he even care? Yeah. Why would he care that his mobile emitter isn't around, right? He's a program. It shouldn't matter.
The only thing I can think of is he's developed some humanity.
How?
He's gotten used to. Well, but that's really fundamentally the story of the doctor. He changes over time, right? Yeah. He grows a little more humanity over time.
Right. But that should be Seven of Nine story, not the doctor. Right. You know, I mean, he's still a program.
They're both kind of doing it, though.
I guess, but he's still a computer program. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm being really critical of the doctor at this point, but it bothered me. It really did.
It bothered me for different reasons. I can totally buy that the doctor's program can adapt and can start to, I mean, so much of his story with Kes, with the early episodes, was about him having a human experience and his program sort of adapting and mm-hmm. learning and growing. I totally can buy that. What I didn't buy is in this specific episode, mm-hmm. it just seemed like it was tagged on. It didn't really relate. Neither one of their stories related to anything that was happening in our A story. And it just felt disconnected. That was the part that bothered me.
Yeah. Like the Vulcan line, like the scene between Seven and Harry, sort of disconnected as well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is an episode of disconnected scenes is what it is.
It felt very disconnected.
Yes. Yep.
Let's see what happens next.
Astrometrics. So now we're in Astrometrics and we have a scene between Tuvok and Seven. Again, I like this pairing. I love these two together. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is my new favorite pairing. I like watching Tuvok and Seven interact. Mm-hmm. They locate the building that is holding the processor, the important processor that we need. And so then, you know, now we know where to go. So that's the end of that scene. And we jump back into Da Vinci's new workshop and we have Janeway's there. And of course, Tal shows up in this.
Yes.
One.
So now that Seven and Tuvok have figured out the location of this processor, Tuvok calls down to Janeway on the planet and says they know where it is. And Janeway agrees to carry out this plan that she'll go to this location with Da Vinci and Voyager will rendezvous with them and beam them out of there with the processor. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Tao has overheard all of this and catches her at gunpoint and says, give me your comm badge. So now mm-hmm. he's not going to be able to, Tuvok's not going to be able to, and Voyager's not going to be able to locate them because she doesn't have her comm badge. He's got her comm badge.
Right.
And just then, Da Vinci comes around with like a fire extinguisher in his hand.
It looks like that. It looks maybe like a steampunk version of a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
And knocks the bejesus out of Tao.
Knocks Tao out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Janeway says, I've got to get out of here. You need to come with me too. And Da Vinci's like, I want to stay here. There's magic here. He doesn't understand how all of this science could be happening here. Electricity and things, you know, appearing and disappearing. It just seems like magic to him.
Yeah.
And she says, no, you're a prisoner here and he needs to get back. She's going, you need to get back to Europe. They need you back to Europe. And he's like, I hate Europe. I hate them. I hate the Florentines.
The people that live in Florence.
Florentines, I think.
Florentines. Okay.
Florentines, I think. Yeah. But yeah, he's like, I hate those people. And she says, okay, do it for me. I need you.
Yeah.
And then he finally says, for you, I will go. And
for you, Katarina, anything. But see, this is, but this is my biggest problem with this script, with this episode. Why didn't she pick up the con badge from the unconscious Tao?
Oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So really, I mean, Janeway's not, why would, Janeway's the captain of a starship. She's not going to forget her one way to communicate with Voyager, which clearly she can just pick up off of the unconscious body of Tao. So what should have been written into the script was Tao takes this con badge, throws it on the ground and stomps on it and breaks it. Exactly. That would have made more sense.
Yeah,
but there's a huge hole in the script right here.
I think so too.
Which really made me very upset. Okay.
I feel like there's a lot of holes in the script. I don't even know how to.
This is like a, this is the Swiss cheese episode. It is full of holes. Okay.
Yeah. It feels like cheese. Holy.
It's holy. It's holy.
she says to Da Vinci, that they've got to find the entrance to the storage facility. Yep. And that's where there's a wondrous invention she calls. It's called a computer processor, she says. And they can use it to send a beacon to her. And she says about the computer processor, it can send information over great distances.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's the internet, actually. The processor is different. But anyway. And she says, all we got to do is find this and we'll be rescued.
Yeah. They're at the, so they're at the exterior of this storage facility, which
where
is
was that, by the way,
that kind of looks like something we've used before too.
I think I know where it was.
City of Industry, maybe.
There is a old power plant down at Manhattan Beach.
Oh yeah. That's
that
right.
A couple episodes of Chuck shot down there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as we got into this episode, I was like, oh, that's the power plant at Manhattan Beach. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Place.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they filmed these scenes. But this was the facility where our computer processor was being held.
Yes.
And they find it. They have this sequence of going through the old power plant, which looked super cool. And steam shoots out here and there, and it was very cool.
Yeah, but there wasn't a lot of dressing on that interior to make it look futuristic, because it's still very, you know, 20th century, right?
Oh, very.
And then there's that scene. They're inside. They're looking for the goods, that the stolen goods, and then they talk about on the bridge. You know, Harry's like giving the play by play. You know, because he can detect, like, oh, and now they're inside, and oh no, there's 14 guards that are converging upon them, but yet we don't see 14. We see one guy come in.
We see one guy, and then we see two outside. That's it.
Two outside. That's it. So again, more holes in this.
It was very thin on extras this episode. This whole episode. Like back in the town square.
It's like there the were budget.
A lot of different. Yeah. I think they put all their money into locations and they didn't put it into other stuff.
Exactly.
Like extras and
stunt
people and things like that.
Yep. I agree. Budgetary issues here. Mm-hmm. Finally, Janeway beams the processor back to Voyager so that everything's cool there. We have the computer processor back. So it's sort of a jumping back and forth between Janeway and Leonardo on the planet surface inside the storage facility and
back to Voyager.
Back on Voyager on the bridge with Harry. And are you up there too? Are you on the bridge with us at that point?
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah, I've got a couple lines.
I remember.
I don't even think they covered my lines down front, because I noticed at one point we were sort of over Chakotay and pointing down, and I kept turning around to deliver my lines as if I was reading some information. And I went there, blah, 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 blah. And then turning around, I'm like, why wouldn't I just keep my eyes on the screen and the information? And I was like, oh, they didn't want to come around and
shoot him in the background.
He's deep in the background. It's fine.
Budgetary concerns, Robbie. That's budgetary concerns. Okay. So now we are with Janeway, before being captured by the rest of the 14 guards who we never see. Janeway uses a sight-to-sight transporter and beams Leonardo and herself out into the remote part of the planet. So they're out in a woodsy kind of, they're in the Malibu Canyon. They're into Panga Canyon somewhere.
On some trail in Malibu State Park.
Yeah, Malibu. Yeah.
And they're walking and he's like, you need to stop and explain this. I'm confused. And he says, you know, people are disappearing, lightning through my body. That's the phaser that shot at him. He said, my mind can't understand this magic. Mm-hmm. And And so Janeway tries to explain it, and she thinks for a minute, and she, I guess she sees a bird off camera, because she says, if you weren't a human, what if you were a bird? And then she goes through sort of explaining your reality would be that of a bird.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't understand human experiences. Yes. And so she says to him at one point, she says, as a man, can you believe there's certain realities that are beyond the limits of your understanding?
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that was the big idea of this episode, that sort of idea of like things that seem like magic to us, like computers sending information, you know, to other places, the internet or whatever. It may seem like magic if you don't understand it, but it's not magic. It's just beyond your understanding right now.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought that was, to me, that was the where I finally was like, oh, here's the theme. Here's the point of this, is that Da Vinci's actually learning that there are things that are beyond what he had, even though he's a genius, even though he was a Renaissance man that in his time knew more than most people then.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a child. He's like a bird in the future. He doesn't understand all this stuff.
Yeah.
I love when we go to engineering after Torres has gotten the computer back online, and she says, okay, Captain, we're open for business. And I was like, that's a 20th century term.
That sounds
like a Paris line. Clearly they're dating now, because she's using
lines that Paris uses.
We're there open you go. For business.
Yes. Yes. The alien ships attack. Right. And while this is going on, Leonardo leads Janeway to the edge of this cliff, and lo and behold, his flying machine is there.
Which looks a lot like a hang glider.
Yes, that's what I wrote. It looks like a hang glider, but it's a revised flying machine,
yes,
as opposed to the one in the beginning of the episode, which fell into the body of water. And it's more structurally sound. And Janeway takes a chance, and they head off.
And she, by the way, she looks at this hang glider,
mm-hmm,
and she says, "That looks like duranium alloy. Should be light enough." How does she know that this is duranium alloy, whatever that
it's,
is?
First of all,
just
it's
by looking at it,
it's painted, right? It's yeah, painted.
It's painted. You can't green even or something. How does she know the metallurgy of this particular alloy? She hasn't weighed it. She hasn't checked the density. She's just looking at it and going, "Yep, duranium alloy should be light enough." What?
I'm gonna say
anyway.
As a teenager, Janeway was an intern for a metallurgist.
She can just sense it.
This is why Janeway is so amazing. She knows all kinds of random things.
I used to ride a lot of bicycles, and I was into like carbon fiber bikes, and there were aluminum bikes, and there were, you know, carbon, different chromoly tubes and all kinds of, right? But when you go to the bike store and you look at all these bikes, they're all painted.
You don't know what it is. No.
You have to lift it up. You have to kind of clink on it. That's aluminum. Oh, that's carbon fiber. She didn't do any of that. She just sort of looked at it.
She just looked at
uranium alloy. Got it.
Check. Love it.
That was crazy.
And when did Leonardo have time to build that berm? You know, that little jump, when he takes off, they take off on the glider.
It's like a landing ramp.
That's a whole that's a whole huge dirt, you know, ramp that was fabricated out of the nothing.
By the way, I gotta say, I don't know how they did this. I don't know if they did it practically, if they had a real hang glider or something out there flying, or if they did it with digital effects, but it was cool.
It was cool.
I was surprised how much of this flying they did, because it was that's kind of it's a tricky thing to do a realistic kind of, you know, Da Vinci plane takeoff. It's not like a spaceship that's CG that we can sort of create anything we want. This is something that needs to look real, and it looks.
But you're not talking about like the close-up shot of them when they're in the air and they're looking at each other. That would have been green screen or something, right?
Would have been green screen or what we call poor man's, where you just point it up toward the sky and you blow fans on them and pretend they're up.
You're
up
talking about when they actually start going and they go on the little dirt ramp and they take off and they're flying. That part, maybe CGI, maybe practical, right?
We don't know. I don't know. And there were some shots where I was like, how did they get those shots? Because back then, you know, nowadays we have drones.
Yes.
People are familiar with drones and
no drone usage back then.
No. So whatsoever. How did they get those
yeah.
shots?
How did they catch that? Yeah. Is there a crane? Is there a crane high enough to be able to, not really, because they were way up there.
They were way up there. Right? Even back then.
Yeah.
They didn't have techno cranes, which is something we use now, which has a telescoping arm that can go up to like 50 feet high or something.
Even further, right? No,
they didn't exist. Okay. I don't know how they did some of this. Interesting. It was really, I was impressed with it. It was a nice little sequence with the flying and everything.
Yeah.
It was my favorite part of the episode, actually.
Right there. Okay. Yeah. And I love Kim's play-by-play. You know, there are the Captain and Leonardo are at the precipice. And the whole thing is we can't beam them up. We can't beam them aboard the ship because we're not close enough. Right.
Yeah.
And so then Kim says like, and now they're in the air. I say that because
I know
because we don't know that they have a glider. Right. So we're thinking, okay,
how are they midair?
Janeway has turned into Jesus. She's not only walking on water, she's walking on the air. She's just levitating.
Yeah, right? She's just levitating.
Yeah.
It was cool. Mm. And then they get beamed back and then we have a kind of captain's log and we end up back at Da Vinci's workshop for a little recap. And he says he's going to France.
Yep.
He's going to use what he's learned.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, you're never going to find the materials that were at that planet. You're never going to find the same exact materials. And he said something at one point, he said, like mechanical women who live in boxes. It must have been the Majel Barrett's computer voice.
That's right. You know,
when he heard that.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he talked about his first memory was a great bird on his bed.
Yeah.
That he, you know, his memory of dreaming of flying and dreaming of this. And then the very last image is a bird in a cage, which I thought was another poetic, like Joe Manosky had a lot of poetry in this episode.
Right.
In terms of Da Vinci and... Mm-hmm. And sort of having a dream of something that's maybe feels magical right now, but eventually becomes real.
That's really what I
took away from this whole Da Vinci point of view.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And my question to you is your lesson and your
theme. I would say what my takeaway from this was science looks like magic if you don't understand it. And that was kind of Da Vinci's point of view.
Yeah.
Is to him, it looked like magic, even though he was a man of science. And again, for his time, he was ahead of everybody else. But when he got thrust into the future, it looked like magic to him. And he just had to, you know, he had to understand it. It was a lot for him to catch up to. But, you know, if he knew that it was not magic, it was science, which he was a scientist. He was going to figure it out eventually. And that would be his journey, you know. That's my takeaway. If I had to, this is a hard one for me to figure out what it was.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Likewise. For me, I was just thinking like, what is the lesson here? And I kept thinking, I don't think I even have. So I right off the bat, I said, this is one of the hardest episodes to pull a lesson out of.
Yeah.
So I just ended up writing down, don't steal. Don't invite bad karma into your life by stealing something that doesn't belong to you. End of story. That's it. You know, I mean, it's a little bit on the nose, but I really couldn't find something
that's good. I like that.
Moved me.
Yeah. Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, good. Do we know what next week?
Yes. Next week, we move away from the Robbie Duncan McNeil, Tom Paris fan club episodes. Yes. And we move on to Mortal Coil. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to what Robbie and I believe to be the worst so far episode of Voyager.
And but at least we had good costumes.
This may be one of the
some nice Halloween gear.
Although this is one of the poorer episodes of Voyager, this may be one of the best episodes of the Delta Flyers, because this is the first time that we have been in costume.
Yes, that's right? True.
Okay.
That's true.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much. And join us next week when Robbie and I review Mortal Coil. See ya.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.